My name is Emily, and you've been listening to Chicks Voices on KHEN LP 106.9 Salida. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. It's really great coming in here and playing some of my favorite music. Up next, we have Truth Quest with Melody, so stay tuned for that, and have a great week, and we will see you next Tuesday. Thanks.
Pushing folks around, Cheney's in the backseat, polish and the crown, we're going down, going down.
Well, Bush 2 is in the White House, just passing tax reforms, giving trillions to his rich friends, and stealing from the poor. Don't blink your eyes, he'll sell the store.
Corporations in the Pentagon just cooking up the wars. Condi's in the State House, St. Jim's World, in the Ocon, in the Ocon.
And baby Bush and the party of God, that spelled G for guns and O for oil and D for drugs. That gave us 911, was an inside job.
George Bush in the White House, spreading fear across the land, tearing up our Bill of Rights as fast as they can. War on terror, such a scam.
Well, Collins at the UN just showing diagrams. Can't you see those weapons just scattered across the land? He's making deals. He's shaking hands.
Yeah, Rummy's in the desert, got blood on his hands. Wolfie's at the World Bank, making new demands. We'll take your oil, you keep saying.
In the Middle East, Guantanamo down south. Congress got that Patriot Act just shoved on down at the mouth. They took our Constitution and threw it out.
Well, Karl Rove in the White House, and they say he's Bush's brain. All his corporate buddies and their voting machines. We cast our votes, they wipe them clean.
Now they're shooting for the world with torture and police states and preemptive war. The Fourth Reich's here in America.
King George in the White House is pushing folks around. Chains in the backseat, polish in the crown. We're going down, we're going down.
You're listening to KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community supported radio. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest, we are now available at www.givemesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and my co-host this evening is Eric Carlstrom, and that was him performing White House Blues. And our guest tonight is Michael Shaw, and this is Truth Quest. And this, let's see. okay, and I was going to say the disclaimer here. Get lost in my notes here. Okay, the opinions expressed by this program are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. Eric and Michael, are you there?
I am, Michael Shaw. Yes.
Okay, great. I wanted to introduce Michael here a little bit. He's he's been a founding participant and is a director of the director of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, which is now called Freedom Advocates, and it's an organization dedicated to the ideals of American liberty. Freedom 21 Freedom Advocates seeks to lessen public confusion about the nature of personal and family autonomy and private property, inform as to the constitutional administration of government, and assess American security and international implications. Michael Shaw sat on the Santa Cruz local United Nations Agenda 21 committees in the mid-90s. He now seeks to inform Americans about how the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda 21 is being implemented throughout America in order to establish new systems of government, justice, and economics. He demonstrates how sustainable development is a coordinated and comprehensive program that is designed for eliminating private property and personal and family autonomy. Michael Shaw is proprietor of the Liberty Garden, a 75-acre coastal oasis acknowledged on the cover of an international environmental science journal for its breakthrough creation of a native plant wonderland. The purpose of Liberty Garden is to show, by example, how private property provides for better stewardship of the earth than does government control, at www.libertygarden.com. And he's also the co-owner of the multi-location California-based self-storage company and owns and operates a self-storage management company. He's earned his BA in political science and juris doctorate. He has practiced as a certified public accountant and as an attorney focused on taxation. Mr. Shaw is a litigant defending his private property from sustainable development policies in separate actions against the counties of Santa Cruz and Alameda, California. And he's also a frequent host nationally on syndicated radio shows. Michael, is there anything else I can add? We can add to that.
Well, you know, I'm still awake. No, that was fine. Thank you.
Well, Michael, it's great to have you with us tonight. Speaking from my side here in Crestone, I've had a sabbatical from my teaching job at California State University, Stanislaus, where I have been teaching human ecology and other courses in physical and environmental geography. And in this sabbatical year I've got involved in a number of issues that have brought me around to your writings and your website. You know, we were talking just briefly a moment ago about the fact that not too many academics are jumping into the issue of Agenda 21 and sustainable development. And I would just say from my side, I didn't know. So don't presume, I guess the moral is either I'm just a dunce, or else I'm perhaps representative of the vast majority of academics who are busy doing their own little thing, and this is a huge topic. This is a mind-bogglingly large topic, and it involves a lot of things that are perhaps controversial. So, of course, academics need to get on board, but I think a lot of us just are just gerbils on our own little wheels spinning around on our own little area of expertise, and we haven't looked at the big picture. I've learned a lot this last sabbatical year, and I thank you for your work. Could you just briefly kind of start us out here with your own explanation of how you got into this issue and how your background has helped you deal with it?
Well, I got into the issue after spending between 15 and 20 years fighting with the Santa Cruz County Planning Department. Now, that's an infamous organization. It is a land-grabbing and property stealing organization that has existed in that form for three or four decades now. But in the year 2000, a neighbor brought me some documents that demonstrated to me very clearly that public-private partnership was the new formation of local and global economics. And that just hit me very hard. I mean, I had known of this woman who gave me the information for some time. She had been making some noise in Santa Cruz about Santa Cruz County's commitment to Agenda 21, but I didn't know what that was. But when I saw these documents from the World Trade Organization and other internationalist organizations really proclaiming the glory of public-private partnership, it was like I immediately was struck with a lightning bolt, because public-private partnership to me was simply explained in one word, and that word is fascism. Economic fascism depends upon the relationship between private entities and government. And Benito Mussolini, was clear about that call for the reorganization of the Italian economy back in the 1920s. And, of course, Adolf Hitler adopted the same program. And so, for me, the striking force was this notion that economics was to be fostered through the idea of combining government with business. And today, once you can grapple that concept, you can look around all over and you see that dynamic happening everywhere, on the national and international level, as well as the local level. And from there, it just all flowered out. And, my wife and I and many others in our community have spent nonstop full time on these issues for the last 7 or 8 years. It just gets deeper and deeper.
Michael Woody.
So your efforts then are kind of several fold. Number one, you're trying to preserve your private property rights in your own community. Number two, you're trying to educate your own community. And number three, you're trying to educate the country. Would you put it that way?
I would. And what's really curious is that over the last year or so, people and organizations in Canada, Great Britain, Australia, even a little bit out of New Zealand, have tied into our website and are expressing the same problems in their countries. You know, in Queensland, Australia, for instance, sustainable development has moved so far that that state, which is about the size of the west coast of the United States, that state has withdrawn from the Australian Constitution, established their own globalist constitution, and is now run by a private corporation.
Do you foresee
the landowners in the state of Queensland, Australia, can continue to own their property until they die, but all product sales have to be approved by the Brigalow Corporation, and at the owner's death, the property then goes straight to this corporation that now runs the state of Queensland, Australia. So we're seeing it happen all around the world. England is really being ransacked by sustainable development policy. So it's not just a national phenomenon. It is a globalist one.
That Brigalow Corporation, isn't that Brigalow Corporation something else? I mean, there's somebody, I ran across that just recently in somebody's interview, that the Brigalow Corporation, and I don't recall who it is, but unless it has something to do with the Queen or some major facsimile thereof, are you familiar with that, Michael?
Well, no, I'm not. I think the Brigalow Corporation is like the Federal Reserve. You don't get to know who's behind it, but it is in total power and has complete control over all land use and all other political decisions that go on in Queensland. But more important to Americans,
you get the name of
what is Brigalow Corporation?
Bigelow.
Brig, isn't it
Brigalow?
I think it's Bigelow. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, Bigelow.
B-I-G-A-L-O-W.
Bigelow Corporation. Okay. Well, perhaps now would be a good time, Michael, to define for our audience what the United Nations Agenda 21 is and how that fits in with this concept of sustainable development. Because most people, myself included, up to about 9 months ago, don't know what these things are.
Well, sustainable development is a program that comes out of the United Nations. And it comes out of the UN's Agenda 21 program. Agenda 21 is the agenda for the world for the 21st century. In short, sustainable development, or Agenda 21, the terms can really be used interchangeably, is about the transformation I'm going to focus on America because I think that's the real target. It's about the transformation of America from a land where unalienable rights are recognized through our Declaration of Independence and acknowledged in our Constitution, into a society where private property is piece by piece abolished, and where education is converted into a system where global citizenship is taught to all our young people. And Agenda 21, or sustainable development, in their own words, in the United Nations' own words, the Biodiversity Assessment Report, calls for the reduction of human population to 1 billion. Now, that's an 85% reduction in present population levels. So if that doesn't grab the listener's attention, nothing will. Private property is to be abolished. Our youth is to be educated to a new world system, and population is to be massively reduced. In a nutshell, that's what sustainable development is. Now, the active phases of sustainable development today are focused in the first and second categories. It is the abolition of private property, and we can see this in 1,000 perspectives. I always call it the 1,000 points of darkness. And certainly, if you're watching what's going on in our educational system, in our national education system, our school-age children are not being taught the principles of Americanism. You find an eighth grader who can define for you unalienable rights, and I'll give you a gold star, because not many 13-year-olds can do that today. And if by 13 you don't know what unalienable rights are, you're not going to understand them when you're 25 or 45. So it is a plan to create global governance in accordance with principles that are not American. That would be my nutshell explanation.
Okay, so the plan is to reduce the population of the world, as you say, from the present 6.5 or 6.6 billion down to 1 billion, consolidate the nations of the world by first regional, by this in regionalism process by which you would form trading blocks like the European Union and the supposedly upcoming North American Union, and then eventually you merge those into one global government under, I suppose, United Nations auspices. You take large to do this, of course, you have to control, or they have to control, the natural resources. And so are we seeing that the control of natural resources is part of the implementation of this Agenda 21?
Yes, absolutely. And the specifics on that are what's called the Wildlands Project. And once you understand the Wildlands Project, it doesn't take very long, you can begin to see its application in any newspaper you pick up around this country. In short, the Wildlands Project is the plan to take over 50% of the United States landmass and put it into a so-called wildland category. What happens when land is turned into wildlands is that there can be no human endeavors. Not only can we not live there, but there can be no resource extraction. So when we see the roadless programs being implemented by the federal government, or the wolf reintroduction programs happening all across the country, and programs like that, when you see that the large corridors being taken and turned into heritage areas, all of these are steps, these and other moves, are steps towards creating this 50% wildlands coverage area across the United States. Now, when you think about it, if half the U.S. is off limits for resource extraction, that's why oil is not being explored in many areas or developed in many areas that have oil, is to preserve the wildland nature of these properties. When you take half of America and put it off limits for resource extraction, you can bet that this landscape will not support current population. And so the first step in bringing about the transformation of America and the world during the 21st century, that's why it's called Agenda 21, is to take away from us the natural resources that are in the country. So the Wildlands Project goes for the richest areas and makes them simply off limits. And in the interim, what's happening, of course, is that the regulations placed upon landowners in these wildland areas are breaking their backs. That's in the early 90s, we saw most independent timber operators here in the West simply driven out of business. They could not deal with the regulations. And so eventually these lands get gobbled up by the Nature Conservancy or public-private partners like Weyerhaeuser, and pretty soon the concept of the American owning America has slipped away. And at that point, you want to continue to be a partner, say Weyerhaeuser, with the globalist, emerging globalist government, you do what they say. And if they say you will not extract any resources from this broad geographic area, then simply you abandon any efforts to do that. You stay in the good stead of the globalist world order. Now, the Wildlands Project covers 50%. Most of the rest of the land are buffer zones to these wildland areas. Now, what happens in the buffer zone is that only public-private partners operate there, live there, or extract resources from those areas. So you can see a map of the United States at our website. These maps were done by Michael Kaufman. Dr. Michael Kaufman, who's an environmental scientist who has studied this longer than I have, and has provided maps that have been actually, the information for which was actually surreptitiously taken out of the Geneva UN headquarters back in the mid-90s. And you can see these maps, and you can see the red zones, which are the wildlands area, and the yellow zones, which are the buffer zones to the wildland areas. And in these buffer zones, it is a public-private partnership. Think of it as a Mussolini or Hitler economic system that will be in charge of all activity in those areas. You say, well, what about all the people? Well, all the people get drummed into what's called smart growth zones. Now, smart growth, if you're in an urban area, you know what smart growth is, because it's happening in every American city across the country. Portland was the prime example, which began its smart growth development patterns back in the late 80s. It drove the prices sky high. It made the traffic insurmountable as it works to try to force people to get on, to abandon their cars and to get on trains for their transportation system. The idea of smart growth is that all the people will be living in these narrow zones with the wild animals looking in at the people. It will be the people in cages under the plan of sustainable development or Agenda 21. Now, of course, when the game is fully played out, you got to remember there'll be a whole lot fewer people. And so, you know, the commitment, allege the commitment to really building out these smart growth zones is not all that great, although our dollar will be utilized and sacrificed in the effort to create the transportation systems and the living situations that smart growth called for. Here in Santa Cruz, you know, we're a relatively lightly populated county on the central coast of California. The plan is to convert the rail line along the coast into a light rail. the plan is to continue to keep our very underdeveloped freeway at two lanes in each direction, and then to build high-rises in place of the single-family homes along these rail lines, and to thereby increase our population dramatically as a smart growth center, where people live in high-rises, small high-rises, leave their children with the government daycare center, get on the train, and go to their assigned job. Now, where you are in Colorado, my suspect is that you're part of the wildland zone, and the people living there will need to be relocated into Denver's smart growth zones.
Yeah, just for our Colorado listeners here, in Crestone, which is a very beautiful community at the base of 5 14,000-foot peaks, we have the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve to the south, which I don't believe has been turned into a World Heritage Site yet, although I think it's just a matter of doing the paperwork, as one Park Service representative said. We have the brand-new Lubaca National Wildlife Refuge to our immediate west, and to the east of us in the Sangre de Cristos, we have Rio Grande National Forest and Sangre de Cristo Wilderness, and yes, we're completely, and BLM surrounding that. So we are completely surrounded by government land. It could be that the plans call for turning this whole area into what you call a core reserve or buffer zone, and then make it off limits to normal human beings. I suppose the ruling elite could pretty much live wherever they wanted. I suppose they could move into our houses if they wanted.
Well, but there aren't very many ruling elite. I mean, they've got a lot of, you know, I always liken it to the, you know, to the slaves and the slave masters. They've got a lot of slave masters, but slave masters are slaves nonetheless. The true ruling elite is a very narrow bunch of people. And that's why I have great hope. And I think it's all that it's going to take is the information transfer to the average American in a way where they can really see that their future, and certainly the future of their children and generations thereafter, will be ruined. You know, the life of human beings living as humans will be ruined if the Agenda 21 plan comes into place. And, you know, when
of course,
people...
This all comes about at the time that... Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say that, you know, if the people don't understand that, we are going to be overwhelmed by it. You know, you live by Sun Tzu, the great historic Chinese military thinker. You know, if you don't understand your enemy, you're going to lose the battle. It's as simple as that. If you understand your enemy, you will win the battle. And so when we understand what we're fighting against, and there's great efforts undertaken by the money masters of the world today that keep us from understanding the truth and the nature of sustainable development, Agenda 21, that keep us from understanding that the Democrat Party and the Republican Party are both fully committed to the policies of sustainable development. That's why you're not going to read about it in the Denver newspapers or out of the New York Times. That's because this narrow elite that runs sustainable development is the narrow elite that has been in charge of the creation of money in this country for nearly 100 years, in England for over 300 years. And as it is today, it was Rothschild who said, if I make the money, I care not who makes the laws. Well, 300 years later, you know, he and his family, his descendants, have exactly what they want. They make the money out of thin air, in a system of fiat money. They've aggregated and controlled money for centuries. They've bought up the industries they need to control the American mindscape. And now they are running to the finish line, as it was that the author Shaw, back in the early part of the 19th century, predicted. He said, we will crawl like a turtle until we see the finish line, and then we will break out into the open. Today, they are breaking out into the open.
Michael, how
would you bring out...
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, how do you?
Okay, so they're using an incremental. They're using an incremental process. They've used a stealth process, for instance, in trying to implement this merger of the United States with Mexico and Canada, which they want to accomplish by January 1st, 2010. They've been having meetings. When I say they, I mean the ruling elite, the people who are head of NORAD, the people who are, you know, in the State Department and the Department of Defense and representatives from the White House in this country and their counterparts as well in Canada and Mexico, have been having these secret meetings for, you know, since 2005 to move us towards this goal of regional merging of countries. And if the United States, of course, merges with Canada and Mexico, there'll be some big casualties, not least of which will be probably the Bill of Rights, what in fact makes living in America special, the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, etc. But I just want to emphasize this point about the incremental nature of this whole process and the stealth nature, so that most Americans are going about their business, trying to live their lives, struggling to survive or having a good time or whatever they're doing, and they have no clue about what's been going on. Now, a couple weeks ago, Melody and I interviewed Joan Vion, who's been to over 100 international meetings of the UN and other international groups. And she has a very clear idea of what the goal is, and you have described it quite well. But the average American has not been to those 100 international meetings, has not traveled around the world, does not know that global government is already in place, does not know that our property rights are being sold out from under us. So, as you say, I think it is a problem of educating our fellow Americans. But it's more than that. There's been a tremendous propaganda offensive. And like I say, I've been teaching a course in human ecology, and, you know, we've been throwing around the world sustainable this, sustainable that. Yeah, we need sustainable agriculture. Yeah, we need sustainable, you know, forestry. Yeah, we need sustainable, you know, everything. Everybody loves the word sustainable. But most of us without the slightest inkling that sustainable development, as defined in Agenda 21, calls for loss of property rights and depopulation of the world to 1 billion. I mean, this is unconscionable. So I agree with you completely that the problem is one of education. But anyway, I just wanted to bring out the point that this is being done by stealth, it's being done by fraud, it's being done incrementally, and we need to somehow mobilize the people who still can think rationally. And of course, our computer contacts, our internet, it does help us to do that.
Well, it helps them too, but it does help us. What we have to recognize, and you know, I
know you had a meeting recently with your group, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Could you tell us a little bit about what your meeting was about in Texas?
Well, we had a meeting by the Freedom 21 group. Now, that's that's actually based in Tennessee. Henry Lamb formed the Freedom 21 group. We took on that name when we first formed ourselves. But this was the Freedom 21 conference, and it was probably as good a one as we've ever had. The message was consistent and clear. And somebody in the audience, having heard 3 days of presentations, came away with a pretty clear understanding of the problems we face and some ideas on how to get ourselves out of it. But it always comes down to making sure that more people understand what we're up against. And, you know, I'm a relative newcomer to this dynamic because people in the know back in the early 90s were aware of this. I became aware 10 years later. But now is the time when it's becoming easier and easier to demonstrate to people that something's really off, and this is what it is. We see our dollar in trouble. We look at our political parties, and we know none of it makes any sense. You know, Obama talks about change. Well, he's talking about change to sustainable development policy. You know, McCain is the Republican Party itself is a member of the IDU. That's the International Democrat Union. The IDU is a globalist organization comprised of 80 political parties from all around the world.
I've never heard of that one.
Most people haven't. You know, and if you bring this up to a Republican in the know, they will run from this so fast it'll make your head spin. But what the IDU is it's led by the GOP and a party in Australia and the Conservative Party of Great Britain. And their purpose is to adopt for the entire world the principles of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. Now, if you're a social science teacher at Aptos High School, that's the local high school here where I live, you'll say, well, what's wrong with that? We have a model UN club at our campus. We think the Declaration of Human Rights is every bit as good as the Declaration of Independence, in fact, probably better. Well, the key to understanding the Declaration of Human Rights, the UN document, is to look at Article 29, subsection C. Because there it says that the rights and freedoms granted by the UN Declaration are subject to the policies and principles as established from time to time by the United Nations. In other words, we started this show talking about unalienable rights, the right of every human being to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Michael, I'm going to have to break here just a second because apparently Dr. Carlson got cut off. I don't know how, but it seemed to have happened, so I'm going to have to call him back here. And since I'm just a person of one doing this, so I'll put a little bit of a song on here and then we'll get right back with you, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
From high school, married their high school boyfriends, moved into houses in the same zip codes where their parents live, but I could never follow. No, I could never follow. Live like a gypsy. Six strong hands on the steering wheel. I've been a long time gone now. Maybe someday I'm gonna settle down. But I've always found my way somehow by taking the long way, taking the long way around, taking the long way.
Are you there? Okay.
Okay, well, here we go again. Sorry, folks.
The International Democrat Union is, as I said, this composite of 80 political parties from around the world. It's led by the GOP, the Conservative Party of Great Britain, and a political party in Australia. In their purpose statement, they say they want the universal adoption of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. Now, there's no way you can live with both the Declaration of Human Rights and the Declaration of Independence. They are mutually inconsistent. The Declaration of Human Rights says in Article 29, Section 3, that the policies and principles and the freedoms granted in the UN Declaration are subject to the policies and principles as established from time to time by the United Nations. So in other words, there is no such thing as unalienable rights. That unalienable rights are the rights that are existent within us as human beings to our own life, to liberty, and to our own property. Well, the UN Declaration of Human Rights holds exactly opposite. Your rights are whatever the UN tells you they are. And the GOP is a member of an international coalition that is designed to bring about the UN Declaration of Human Rights in substitution of the Declaration of Independence for all Americans and for all inhabitants of the world. We're in trouble when the political party that runs this country holds such views. If you think that means vote Democrat, let me tell you, the Democrat Party is just as bad. The Democrat Leadership Council, headed up by Bill Clinton from time to time, is a brainchild of Tony Blair. Tony Blair is the past chairman of the Fabian Socialist Society in Great Britain. It is the Fabians who are at the core, in my evaluation, they are at the core of the New World Order globalist movement. So the Democrat Party is sworn to those principles, the Republican Party is sworn to those principles, and us Americans are just going to be squeezed unless we figure this out.
One thing I'd like to kind of get across to our listeners, too, is, you know, don't accept what we're saying. I mean, some of these terminologies, start looking them up and follow up. Agenda 21 is really a good place to start. It just kind of, I mean, it can be a rather lengthy document, but if you start looking at little bits and pieces of it, you'll start getting an idea of what it's about. Correct, Michael?
Well, that's absolutely right. And for what I just talked about, the International Democrat Union, just go to ID, like dog, U, IDU.org, and you'll find there what it is I'm talking about. But, yeah, if you Google searched Agenda 21, you know, years ago, there were over a million, links under Agenda 21. This is no conspiracy theory. This is hardcore, real politics. If you dig deeper, you'll find that the State Department reports to the United Nations every couple years our successes in implementing Agenda 21. When George Bush Sr. signed the Rio Accords implementing Agenda 21 in this country, he brought it home, and every federal department has as its primary purpose the implementation of Agenda 21. You can go to any federal department and you will find references to sustainable development or Agenda 21 in their own writings, which are on the web. So it's an easy enough thing to research. For the average American, it just sounds too bizarre. Why doesn't the guy on Channel 4 tell me about this? Now, the guy on Channel 4 doesn't tell you about it, because, as an example, GE, which owns NBC, is the number one partner in the public-private partnership between globalist politics and business. So they do the bidding of the globalists, and the bidding means they don't tell the ordinary citizen what it is they're up to.
So as far as the... what is Agenda 21 in the political sense? Is it like socialism? Is that, or a, how would you describe it?
Well, in a political economic sense, I call it either fascist small f communism, capital C, or I call it communist small c fascism, capital F. The social policies are communist. The economic policies are fascist. So what it does is it takes the weakness out of the old Russian Empire, the Soviet Empire, and makes it a strength. It gives it the strength of Hitler's economic force combined with the strength of Lenin and Stalin's social force. So it is the most, politically and economically powerful system, powerful in the sense of taking control over human beings, that has ever been devised in the world. And you combine that with the technology available today, and if you look at the American dollar and you see that that all-seeing eye at the top of a pyramid, and imagine that as the system of political economics that's dawning upon the whole world today, you can begin to understand or appreciate that there's been some real conniving over a very long period of time.
Dr. Carlstrom,
brought us right up to this precipice where sustainable development policy is rampant in Washington, D.C., rampant at your city council. You say, well, wait a minute, you know, I know the guys on my city council, and they aren't part of this fascist communist routine. And I say, well, it is probably the case that even in Santa Cruz, many of the elected officials don't know what program they're working on. Some here do, but many don't. They just go along because the pressure is so high. I had a county supervisor say to me one time, she said, Michael, you don't understand. We don't do these programs. We don't get our federal money. I said, well, Jan, of course. The federal string is tied to the sustainable development policy, and that is what is to rope up every American and make us chattel in this new world order. The federal money, the funny money coming from the federal government, leading you to adopt these smart growth and wildland project initiatives are exactly what needs to be rejected, not accepted like you're some greedy so-and-so that will take money for anything. And that's happening in every community across the country. There's not a single county that does not have its global to local program in operation now.
Why do you think that people have a tendency to accept this? Is it just because they've kind of sheep-dipped terms and made them sound like there's some flowery thing that we want, as opposed to something that in the past would have been something we would have rejected?
Well, certainly the ability to create, their ability to have been patient and create flowery language is part of the dynamic. It's also been the case that they have undermined the principles of Americanism for a long while, to the point where many people don't know what those principles are. And if you go back to Sun Tzu, if you don't understand your enemy and you don't understand yourself, you're not going to win. So it's been a long process in America where the educational system has effectively been federalized, and Dewey's system for robotizing our youth has taken increasing form over each generation. This has been a long time building, to the point today, you know, again, I'd say you go to an eighth grader and you say, what are unalienable rights?
Michael, Dr. Carlstrom, are you still there?
Well, yeah, I got cut off some time ago, and I don't know at what point I was cut off, and I didn't know how I was cut off.
I don't
know where I was in the conversation when I was cut off. Do you have any idea, Melody?
No, I don't. It's hard to tell when you're cut off. It's just that I knew that you weren't talking, and so I that's why I was trying to bring you back in. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, you're doing fine. Go ahead. Okay. I mean, all this is very pertinent and very interesting. So. I'll just listen for a while.
Well, I think one of the keys for people in rural Colorado, rural America, is to really understand the nature of the land use program that is being implemented on Americans, and firstly on rural Americans. Because the key to making the globalist system of sustainable development, Agenda 21 work, is control of the resources. You know, you can pretend to have free enterprise in the city and say, yeah, you can open your own ice cream shop. But if the cow production is under the control of government-private partners, there'll only be as much ice cream or as much milk as the central government officials deem appropriate. And so the effects in the city are secondary. The effects in the rural areas are the primary goal right now of the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 forces. And so if you own a ranch or a farm anywhere in America, you're under pressure. I don't need to tell you that. Everybody who owns a farm, everybody who owns a ranch knows they're under pressure. Environmental pressure, you know, bogus environmental issues, under economic pressure, under political pressure. And what people in rural America need to understand is that there is a coordinated and understandable system that is putting that pressure on them. And if they don't fight back by fighting against that system, they're going to lose. And if the rural landowners of America lose, we're all cooked. And that's a problem that is so difficult to cause urbanites to understand. They just think the furniture comes from the furniture store. They think the groceries come from the grocery store. They have no idea that everything we have in our house, in our business, etc., had its origin in rural America. That's where the resources are. That's what makes everything we have. And when we lose rural America to the globalist concept called Agenda 21, we will have lost America.
Now, Michael, when you do talk about this, and particularly being out in California, I'm sure you ran across those that had bought into the environmentalism and the global warming and all the other issues that have been packaged into this program. How did you counteract their argument?
Well, with those who want to believe that, there is no counteracting. I mean, it is a case, particularly here in California, that the environmental movement has become a religion. And it's a religion without any basis or any coherency. So there are many people you simply can't convince of that. Now, I attempt to first cause people to think that in one sense I'm one of them. You know, our land in La Selva Beach that has been turned from a weed lot into probably the most dramatic display of native plants anywhere on the coast of California, I use to give myself credibility about my commitment to natural resources and to a natural world. And then the best I can do is say, look, the globalist movement centers itself around the idea of what they call the three E's. And the three E's are equity, that means the system of justice, economy, that means the system of business, and the environment. And so what I try to help people understand is that if they suck into this environmental craze, and that's what it is, it's a craze, they are sucking into the three E's. Because if I'm a globalist manipulator, all I want for the average guy is to identify with one of my three E's, and I've won the battle with that person. So you can be a fascist business operator and love the effects, and now you're part of the system. Or you can be a social justice advocate, you know, as opposed to equal justice, and now you're part of the system. Or you can be an environmentalist, and you're part of the system.
Well,
if I could jump in here, I've been an environmentalist ever since I was in college, at Prescott College, and I had an Outward Bound course, and I fell in love with the American West, and I have fought battles to protect this and that. And I've been teaching a course on environmental issues for the last 18 years, and I know that territory, and I think it's maybe a little bit of an overreach to say it's a religion that's baseless. I mean, I'm sure that Reed Noss and other wildlife conservation biologists who put together the Wildlands Project are probably very sincere in trying to preserve habitats for large ungulates, you know, in the West, and their mindset is to preserve nature in its pristine form. But I think most of them, including park rangers and National Wildlife Refuge employees, most of them don't understand how the environmental movement has been co-opted and has been manipulated towards the ends of the globalists. And so I would like to, you know, equity, economy, and environment, I mean, who could argue with that? That's a wonderful, those are great values, but you have to look deeper to realize that they have all been twisted and perverted.
Well, they have, and, you know, I mean, clearly I've spent a lot of money and a lot of time, and I've caught poison oak many times in that pursuit to, you know, improve the ecological nature of my property. But government's role in the economy is to protect our air, to make sure it stays clean, protect our water, make sure it stays clean, and to protect the pollution by one person of another person's property. But if I want to paint my Cadillac with spray paint, you might call that pollution, but it's my property. If I want to junk my house, that's my property. And the environmental rules that require action by a citizen or a landowner that do not protect the public air supply or public water supply are simply rules that have no place in the law. Now, that doesn't mean that as individuals we can't go out and advance the ideas of, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness, and why don't you clean up your property? But as soon as we use law to force that, we're on the road to abandoning the notion of unalienable rights. And once we've gone down that path, there's no retreat. We are now on the path where human life becomes discardable. And the globalists understand that, and that's why they're very comfortable in writing that human population needs to be dramatically reduced.
Yeah, Joan Vion would summarize Agenda 21 and sustainable development as follows. The Earth has limited resources. There are too many people on the Earth using them too rapidly. Therefore, we need to control and monitor those resources by the global body that's available, which is the United Nations, and we need to reduce the impact of the people and the numbers of the people in order to have a good, sustainable, healthy ecology for the future. And so this would be kind of the logic of Agenda 21, which might sound a little bit attractive to somebody who really wants to preserve habitats for animals, but all you have to do is think about it for 5 minutes to realize how diabolical it is. But the point I was making, Michael, is that those three words, equity, economy, and environment, sound pretty reasonable to everybody.
And well, the categories are appropriate categories to consider, but when you look at economy and it says the end of free enterprise and the substitution of fascism called public-private partnership,
right.
And when you look at equity and it's the end of equal justice, the unique American experience in all of human history to be abandoned to adopt the rules of social justice, which is what communism was based upon.
No, I agree with you totally. I'm just pointing out the Orwellian nature, the cleverness of the marketing job that these guys have done to pick these three E's, because they can get a lot of people to buy into that because they've twisted the meanings. We don't know what we're buying into. And so when I say that I, as an academic, have been unaware of this, I think most academics probably are fairly unaware of it. Most academics are probably out there teaching sustainability is a good idea because it's in all the books that are available on the market for our students.
Yeah.
You know, so these things are it's a conventional wisdom that maybe people don't look into deeply until they're trapped.
Yes, I think that's a precise assessment, and. You know, the work of Joan Vion or Michael Kaufman or ourselves at Freedom Advocates is to attempt to raise the consciousness to a level where we aren't trapped.
Yeah.
Because that will be one heck of a trap if we find ourselves, you know, where the claws have closed and the policies that Agenda 21 are really designed to end up with. Are all around us, because it will be very difficult to get out of the circumstance at that time.
Well, you have some heroes working out in your area. Henry Lamb works there, doesn't he?
Well, Henry Lamb is in Tennessee.
Oh, he's in Tennessee.
Henry is a hero. You know, Henry was the first one I know of that, you know, waved the flag about the globalist program wrapped as sustainable development. And, you know, he's been doing this since 1992. or earlier even, because you can trace back clearly to 1987 and the Brundtland Report. You know, she was a Norwegian prime minister, I think, and it called for all the principles of sustainable development. But interestingly enough, the first person I've been able to track to use the term sustainable development was President Woodrow Wilson. And, of course, that immediately preceded the foundation of the League of Nations. So the concept and even the terminology has been around for a long time, but it didn't really hit a running pace until the 1992 United Nations Conference in Rio de Janeiro called the Earth Summit. And that's where Agenda 21 and its related document, the Biodiversity Assessment Report, were put out upon the world. And now everything is moving to follow the protocol established under Agenda 21 and under the Biodiversity Assessment Report. You can go into any county in the United States. Few words blatant to Santa Cruz. All counties have this 20-year program that ties the specifics of its landscape and population to the Agenda 21 program. Here in Santa Cruz, it was easy to identify because it was simply called the local Agenda 21 program. That was back in the mid-90s. We were one of the sample communities. We were ripe for it, and so we were one of the first ones to get it. But every county now has a visioning plan or a 2020 plan or a lot of soft-sounding names that are just the application of what the Global to Local Sustainable Development Program is all about.
And the net result of these going directly from the global initiatives to implementation at the county level is to cut out the state and the federal laws which once were standing in the way of some of these changes. Isn't that right?
Well, that's true. You know, I've always had a tough time understanding the global to local nature, but seeing how active all federal agencies are at implementing Agenda 21. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a big fan of the sustainable
right.
development dynamic. So you do have the national government and state governments working to facilitate it. Remember, you cannot get anywhere in the Democrat or Republican Party unless you're part of this. You know, even the Libertarian Party, you know, Bob Poole of Reason Foundation is the point man on creating the Trans-Texas Corridor. Now, what the Trans-Texas Corridor is a quarter of a mile communication route that begins in Central Mexico on the coast, the Pacific coast of Central Mexico, crosses the border in Texas, stands out in Texas, crosses all over the United States and all over Canada. It's called the Trans-Texas Corridor. One of its purposes is to bring Chinese goods into Mexico and bring them across the border without customs into and across the United States. Now, if that wasn't a Trojan horse, I don't know what a Trojan horse is. But the idea is to create public-private partnership on a globalist basis using cheaply produced goods in China for easy and quick distribution in the United States.
Michael, I need to do a station ID here, and you're listening to KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org, and support for KHEN and TruthQuest brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property, Inc.'s Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown Salida. Find out more at ColoradoHomeProperties.com or call Kevin at 719-207-0858. And my guest tonight and co-host, my co-host tonight is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and our guest tonight is, oh my gosh, my mind just went blank, Michael Shaw. that time of night. Okay.
Well, Michael, before we go any further, could you identify your website for our listeners? So they can the Freedom 21 are now Freedom Advocates, so that they can come to grips with some of this in a quick, easy way.
Okay, it's freedomadvocates.org, so it's easy enough to find. And when you're there, we have a lot of product that can help you understand. And increasingly, we're finding organizations or people who want their associates and their community generally to understand what's going on. And so we offer a number of pamphlets that are written specifically on these issues, and they're available at bulk prices. We've got loads of audio at the website, and video as well, and writings, some from Santa Cruz, but from all over the country, and increasingly from all over the world. Lots of documents in the Research Center that you know, show you what the other side is doing. The other side meaning the globalist forces, UN documents, etc. So, you know, for teachers, it's what I always like to say. For teachers, it's the perfect place to put your students. Give them an understanding of the Declaration of Independence and let them know about the threat that is massing its forces from outside and from within this country. And, you know, make a charge. If you're teaching young people, you know, it's your duty to cause those young people to understand that freedom's fragile, freedom must be understood, and it's got to be defended. And this is a war that will be conducted without firing a shot. That's what Nikita Khrushchev said. And I like to say the same thing back. I say, yeah, we're going to win without firing a shot. And to win, we've got to understand who we are and what we're fighting. And at freedomadvocates.org, you get a good leap on putting those issues in the context of today's political economic environment.
You also have libertygarden.com, too, correct?
Yes. Well, Liberty Garden is the name given to our coastal landscape that I described a bit ago, you know, that we bought nearly a quarter of a century ago, zoned for 30 houses. I haven't been able to build my own, you know, for reasons that are related to sustainable development policy. And but we've taken that landscape and turned it from pasture grass and poison oak into an oasis of several hundred native plant species, all created from dormant seed banks that had sat around for 100 years or more, that we were able to tap into and resurrect. And so it's just a lovely landscape at this point.
How many people are involved in your the Freedom Advocates?
Well, you know, involved. We call ourselves Freedom Advocates because if you're a Freedom Advocate, I think you're involved.
Okay.
You know, if you go to our website, if you distribute our materials, you know, if you just start thinking in the context of saving America, protecting your family, and the like, you too are a Freedom Advocate. But I always like to encourage people. I mean, our tools are designed to help you help your community get this story understood.
There's a lot of different ways, and there's a lot of different groups in that they've infiltrated just about every aspect of our life to kind of gear us towards this direction and to do it, you know, with our consent. And one way, you know, by utilizing the nuance of language and that sort to acquiesce to this communism, fascism, socialism, feudalism, however you want to describe it. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And we had the consult of another local fella who understood these issues quite well when we organized what was then called Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And his warning was constant about being infiltrated and led down paths that would be dead ends. you know, and I listen to them, but I think back now, and those warnings and that concern was so well placed, because you can look around the horn, and you can just find how globalist interests have infiltrated most organizations. I mean, think tanks particularly. You know, if you look at the national think tanks, Cato or the Objectivist societies are fully supportive of the Trans-Texas Corridor. Well, how can that be justified from any American perspective? I don't think it can. I'd be ready to debate any one of those people on that. You can look at the liberal organizations, and you can find their commitment to social justice policies. They might be condemning the public-private partnership dynamic, but it doesn't matter at that point. Once you've bought into a piece of sustainable development, you know, they have accomplished their goal. Dividing us and conquering us is the rule of their game.
Well, I have a question that goes back to something you said earlier, Michael. Out in the West here, we are experiencing, especially in Colorado and Wyoming and places out here, we're experiencing a real land rush for gas development. And, of course, the BLM and other federal lands are under orders from the president to expedite all gas and oil exploration. So what that means is they're just opening it up for corporate exploitation and not even enforcing their own rules or laws. And, of course, the people are marginalized to a huge extent. But how does this present reality fit in with the long-term goal of the Wildlands Project of having 50% of America tied up in land that's off limits to carve it up into core reserves and buffer zones and human settlements, et cetera?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm not sure I have an answer, but you know, I would compare this in one sense to the Russian invasion of Georgia. You know, that certainly does not jive with the sustainable development model and the cooperative global dynamic that Russia is supposed to be part of. And just like Bush's orders to open up oil and gas discovery doesn't jive to the globalist program of making lands off limits. But the geopolitical reality is, I think, and continues to be, and may become our salvation, that the political interests that are behind the globalist movement end up with hostility toward each other in this rush for globalism.
How would you deem this possibility? That, are you familiar with the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman?
A little bit.
Okay. Now, if our country were to go deeply into debt, and that debt were to be paid by our resources, would the drilling for gas be a viable reason to them? You're not
sure. maybe. I do think that the root of globalism is, you know, they make the money out of thin air. They have control over massive resources. At some point in the pursuit of power, the need for money becomes saturated. And now what you want is power over all the people. So I think at the core of the Sustainable Agenda 21 movement are those who have shifted their attention, and I'm not talking about George Bush now, I'm talking about deeper sources than that, who want the attention shifted to how it is that manacles can be put on the average human being. Because as the Department of Interior recognizes in its working papers under Agenda 21, human beings are biological resources to these people. And so, you know, that's where their system begins to fall apart. because you got guys like George Bush who are more interested in their political and economic aspirations individually as opposed to the globalist order's design for a one-world government and a reduced human population. So there are going to be shatterings within their own effort. And as we understand what their goals are, we're better able to take advantage of where it is their practice is inconsistent with their policy.
Can I ask you to speculate? You suggested that there are cracks within the ruling elite, that they might have some internal disagreements and friction. Would you say that there might even be a kind of a competition to see which faction becomes king of the hill and controls this one world government that they seem to be wanting to implement? Do you think there might be two or three competing factions within the global elite?
Well, it would be a surmise on my part. I know Joan Vion has done work in this area. I won't say more because it's not been a focus of my attention. But unless there's somebody with some kind of massive power behind the scenes, you know, it looks to me that the forces led by Prince Charles and the forces led by Mikhail Gorbachev are not necessarily compatible forces, and yet they're both part of the Agenda 21 Sustainable Development Movement. So, yeah, I think that's one of the strategic advantages that we could gain once we gain the understanding of what we're up against and what we and who we are.
Where do you think the military-industrial complex comes in?
Pardon?
Where do you think the military-industrial complex comes in?
Well, you know, the industry is designed, and in fact, I think has achieved its goal of being a public-private partnership. You know, and the military is what's necessary to make it all stick. So you've got major industry palling up with government as a partner, and while government masterminds the military operation that leaves us all vulnerable.
Now, I was listening to an interview you did with William Roberts.
Yes.
And you got into the part about water and how they were going to create shortages and ration it out. Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Well, I think that in the scope of things, the goal is to create resource shortages, whether it's in lumber products or water or anything that we're extracting, by pushing areas into those wildlands that are off limits. Clearly, as long as private property is understood for what it is and is respected, and if the government were not in ownership of land, which is not authorized by the Constitution, America is a land of individuals, not of government might. So let's draw the America of the founders' objective. That is, where the land is privately owned and the resources under the surface of the land and the air extending up into the skies are part of that private property parcel. If that were the case, you know, there's of course laws respecting the landowner's obligation not to pollute the groundwater and not to use too much of it relative to what's there. But within those limitations, if we had a system where the water is available, private interests pull it out and make it available to others, we have a system where the shortage doesn't arise. You've got to remember, water may change its location, may change its form, but you can't eliminate water. The chemicals are there, and they may change the form, like I say, you know, as it evaporates or whatever. But the world has always had the same amount of water. And so if that water is available to us and a private system makes it so, you don't have the shortage. But as soon as you put water under the control of government or under the control of its partners, you can create the shortage. And that's what we're seeing. You know, you see Dianne Feinstein running around talking about busting the dams. So it's not that there's a shortage of water. There's a lack of commitment to create the water necessary to support our population. The World Bank calls for a global water policy that limits the amount of water each human being can use per day. The average American uses 140 gallons of water. The World Bank calls for a reduction of that to 10 gallons per day per person. So get used to not taking showers. The way they get to enforce those rules is to create a shortage in available usable water. And we're seeing water districts around the country moving in that direction. The Sierra Club is an NGO. NGO means non-governmental organization. Now, to be a non-governmental organization, you have to be accredited by the United Nations for the purposes of implementing Agenda 21. The Sierra Club's primary assignment is to get on Western water boards and create this kind of water shortage that we're seeing happening everywhere. Remember again, water isn't disappearing. When the water goes down your shower drain, it's not gone. It may need a process of cleaning, a natural filtration process, but it's not gone. It never disappears. So why we're experiencing an increasing shortage is because of the policies of the NGOs like the Sierra Club, which are, you know, running the water boards throughout the West and are creating conditions that are making it increasingly difficult for people to water their lawns. In 10 years, if we haven't abated this process, we'll be saying increasingly difficult for people to take their showers.
You now have brought up the Sierra Club as an example of an NGO or non-governmental organization. And maybe you could explain a little bit to our audience the role that NGOs play in this this new three-headed monster that we call public-private partnerships.
Well, NGOs are, I think there's about 2,000 of them in the United States that are accredited by the United Nations. And their purpose is simply to implement the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And again, you know, you've got to go to Article 29, Section C to find out that the Declaration of Human Rights holds that you don't have any human rights except that we give you. And anything we give you, we might take away from you. You have no human right to private property. You have, therefore, no human right to access water. You get the water that is allocated to you under our emerging rules, and the Sierra Club will help us design those rules. So when you hear NGO, red flags should go up. These are not non-governmental organizations, if you attach any meaning to those words. They are really extra-governmental organizations or futurist governmental organizations that are working with the United Nations in order to increase their power in the local dynamics in order to implement globalist concepts.
Okay. I had not heard that NGOs had to be accredited by the UN. Would you make that statement of all non-governmental organizations in the United States or some? And if it's all or some, are they aware that their purpose, that they've signed on to this Agenda 21?
Well, there may be organizations that call themselves non-governmental organizations that are not accredited by the UN, but any of the ones that would come to my mind, the environmental groups leading the pack, those are entities that have been accredited by the UN. And does the leadership of the Sierra Club know what their purpose is? Sure. Do the rank and file know what they're all about? Absolutely not. Because if people understood Agenda 21 and sustainable development and the power and control it is already exercising over public policy in this country, gee, the support would be down below 1%. And NGOs would be defrocked. And people with associations with NGOs would not be elected. And the politicians who don't know what end is up would stop listening to the consensus postulations that come out of these NGOs. They'll hold these little community meetings with predetermined outcomes and stack the deck with people that are in support of their objectives and then go to the local elected officials and say, we have a consensus in the neighborhood, you've got to do this. And the local politician just rubber stamps it. That dynamic would end if people understood the true nature of NGOs, including the Sierra
Club. I have certainly seen that dynamic here in Crestone in the last year in spades, where you get a small group of people who claim to represent the, and of course they're all hand-picked, none of them are elected, and they claim to represent the public, and then they show up at the county commissioner's meeting with a little report, and then the counties believe, county commissioners believe that the people have spoken because this self-appointed group gave them a position paper. This seems to be the co-option of American democracy at the local level, certainly.
Well, and it's worse than that. It's the undoing of the American Republic, because it's ignoring the basic concepts of the Declaration of Independence. It ignores unalienable rights. It defeats property interests routinely. It undermines the family and the community ownership of their own lives. And, the problem is with the politicians. I mean, here in Santa Cruz, we've had these councils running since 2002. And I'll tell a story about Santa Cruz and how these consensus councils run by NGOs works. The train dynamic that I referred to early in the show, running along the coast of Santa Cruz, and the widening of the freeway under a tax scheme was rejected by the voters, needed a 67% passage rate, and only got 42%. That was 4 years ago. So we did a good job of informing the public of the scam that was being perpetrated by this consensus council that was pushing this dynamic. Well, this month, the Board of Supervisors has said, well, we're going to buy that train route anyway. And they proceeded to do that. And we're going to construct that third lane on the freeway available only to government vehicles and carpools. And never mind what the voters did 4 years ago, we're going to get our conclusion without a vote. Well, this is the typical dynamic. It's this consensus process that happens in every community that's run by largely NGOs is going to get their objective one way or another. The public goes along. The public doesn't. The public gets what they want anyway, gets what the NGOs want anyway. And that's because the political parties are so tied into the globalist movement that people who are elected are first obedient to the party and secondly obedient to the people. And the people just kind of sit back and they've got their own issues and their own problems. And so you can't make a fight at every step on every issue all the time. And so...
And they know that.
And they know that. And that's why the only way we're going to defeat them is to know what they're up to generally, know what freedom is, and begin to elect a new breed of people. Not people committed to the party and willing to do anything to stay in office, including taking dirty federal money to do dirty federal projects in your community. And that includes building train tracks and smart growth housing environmental protection zones up in the forest so that people can't cut trees, and when the fire comes, it just burns everybody out. That happened here in Santa Cruz this spring. We had three fires that were all predictable. Nobody can manage their forest. Nobody can cut a tree. And so when the fire comes, there's just no way to stop them, and they just burn and burn. And, of course, you've had that dynamic happen throughout the West.
Do you think that's by design?
Well, I was on the Santa Cruz County Resource Conservation District back in the mid-90s. And the Resource Conservation District is the citizen affiliate to the old Soil and Conservation Service, now called the Natural Resource Conservation Service, all part of the Department of Federal Department of Agriculture. And we had a fellow coming out from D.C. to our meeting one day. This is about 1995. And out in the hallway, he said, this is about the time of the Yellowstone fires, he said, look, there's a lot of print that our policy is let it burn. And back in the 90s, that was talk. We need to have fires rush through our forests because we've suppressed fire for so long that the ecological benefits of fire just aren't being obtained. He said, we don't have a let-it-burn policy. I was somewhat relieved. But then he said, we have a make-it-burn policy. So, yeah, I do think that it's one way to accomplish the Wildlands Project, which is to move people out of these areas. You know, if you create such a fuel box by preventing people from managing their land, thinning trees. I mean, here in Santa Cruz Mountains, you know, they're redwood trees that were cut 100 years ago, and they just grow too tight and too thick today. The deer can't even make it through these forests because they're just too thick. And they can't be managed, and so when the fire comes, it's devastating. And all I remember from that fellow was he said, we have a make-it-burn policy. And that's why I think that private interests have been foreclosed from active management of their forest land.
You know, you talked about the consensus councils run by NGOs. I've seen that in operation in our own little community and read some of the things that Henry Lamb's written about this, about consensus process, the Delphi technique, and the use of trained change agents who come into communities to manipulate them to come to foregone conclusions by consensus. They have ways to get a group of people to come up to a predetermined conclusion. These are psychological techniques. So this shows the profound level of infiltration of trained change agents into you know, local communities. It's truly remarkable that this can be done all over the country at the same time.
It is truly remarkable, and it just heralds me back. I was a boy living in Orange County, and Nikita Khrushchev, this is the late 50s, came to Disneyland, and he said, we will bury you without firing a shot. And I thought he was just a crazy old communist. For decades, I thought he was just a crazy old communist. Turns out he knew what he was talking about. Because you're right, they're everywhere. All at once, they came to Santa Cruz earlier than they came to most places. That's why, you know, we have a head start maybe in understanding and proclaiming the horrendous dynamic that has befallen us all now. In Santa Cruz, you know, it started a bit earlier than it did where you are and in most places. But, you know, the fight goes on. They haven't won here. I mean, they started out winning in the 70s, you know, and they're still, you know, riding on top. But they're way behind where they intended to be. Their consensus councils are almost a complete bust. The Board of Supervisors is having to implement these programs on the basis of federal money grants because the consensus just isn't happening. Now, the newspaper will act as though everybody's copacetic and happy about these programs, these smart growth programs and the rural area.
Wilding.
Yeah, the wilding of the rural areas. And the total control that's attempted to be exercised over farm operations. We had our farmers were being taxed for drawing water out of their own wells. And that tax was going up every 2 or 3 years. And, you know, the water agency had collected some $90 million off the farmers for the production of their own water. Well, we got that to court, and amazingly, the California courts decided that issue properly. Now that water agency is going bankrupt, so the county officials are calling for a water emergency moratorium, where they want to combine the water agencies from three counties into one single super agency. Now, that's the regionalism. That's an example of the regionalism, which is core to the political philosophy of Agenda 21. We want to eliminate boundaries, or they want to eliminate boundaries, in order to create governance practices. So can you imagine having a three-county area water agency dictating the use of every drop of water from every user of water? Well, that's the program that will be coming to your town. To our town, because we've defeated them at their first couple of steps, and so now they're going to jump all the way up in an effort to really accomplish the Agenda 21 water goals.
We may already have that to an extent, but the one thing that we're looking at a little bit is we've got Nestle coming in. And Nestle appears at this point in time to be, you know, a good neighbor. But what would you think of it?
Well, I don't know anything about Nestle, so okay. I'd be reluctant to say. But I can tell you that capitalized public companies are in, if they don't go along with the program and become part of the program, their stead is not very good. So I'd be wary, particularly if they work with the government in laying claims to natural resources like water. But I wouldn't have anything specific about Nestle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't just them. I guess what I should be saying is that the private, when you start getting privatization of water and you start shipping it out of an area, then that can have some effects that, you know, down the road that we, you know, may not want to go, or at least really want to look at very heavily.
Well, you raise an interesting term, privatization. That's a libertarian term, and you know there are two breeds of libertarians, and the globalist breed of libertarian uses the term privatization to play into the public-private partnership dynamic of having major corporations in control of resources in coordination and cooperation with government. Now, you know. Privatization is an unfortunate term because it confuses the average person's mind with the idea of private property. And privatization used in this context is it's a fascist economic notion as opposed to the notion of private property, laissez-faire capitalism as opposed to state capitalism. And so it all gets twisted, but the idea of privatization through, the Trans-Texas Corridor is privatization. A Spanish corporation is going to own this thoroughfare coming up through the United States. Now, that's called privatization. Well, what do you mean, privatization? The Spanish corporation Centra is working with Washington, D.C., and with Austin and the Republican governor there to create this insider deal. I don't call that private property. I call that fascism.
Well, you got me on that one. I didn't even look at it in those terms, but you're right.
And what's interesting, the Orwellian twist, of course, is that the Trans-Texas Corridor would involve the eminent domain seizure of private property from many thousands of ranchers and farmers and Texans. So, you know, the trick is to take words and concepts and turn them on their heads so that you don't even almost have the language to debate it.
That's right. But there is good news there, because people in Texas, you know, it gives me a restored hope in the American spirit, because people in Texas are becoming increasingly outraged over the Trans-Texas Corridor. And there are several organizations there that are really rallying the populace. They got something through the state legislature, which the governor gave a pocket veto to, and the legislature's out of session this year. So the program continues, but the public and even the legislature are becoming a bit wise to the dynamic, and there's hope that the Trans-Texas Corridor simply won't happen, because people there are beginning to understand that if the corridor goes through your community or crosses your ranch land, you won't be able to get to the other side. There will be crossings on this freeway very infrequently. Like, you'll have to go up to the major city to cross the freeway that dissects your property. And so property owners and small towns are really rallying to the call down there. And, you know, the whole dynamic has forced a fellow named Robert Pastor, who's the principal architect of the North American Union, to proclaim recently that the North American Union is dead. Well, I don't trust him when he says that, but there is a rallying call in Texas against the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is key to the formation of the North American Union, and there's a word that they use, the harmonization of laws between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Now, when you harmonize our laws with Mexico, if you think that the concept of unalienable rights will survive such a dynamic, then you're living in a make-believe world. The reality of the Trans-Texas Corridor is essential to the creation of the North American Union and to the devolution of the American experience. And that's why I really tip my hat to the people in Texas, and probably even more so to the people in Oklahoma, who said, you put it through Texas, you get up to our border, you're going to have to make a U-turn. Because the Trans-Texas Corridor, the people in Oklahoma are saying, the legislature in Oklahoma is saying, will not come through our state.
Great.
So there is a rally happening across America, but it needs to accelerate greatly.
Yeah, the people that are learning fast and doing everything they can. It's a matter of waking up our fellow citizens and calling them to the kind of citizenship that is required in a democracy. But you know, you mentioned Texas. You had a meeting or a conference with your Freedom Advocates group there, I think, this summer. Could you tell us a little bit about how that went and what was learned and what was done?
Well, it went very well. Tom DeWeese headed it up. It's an organization formed originally by Henry Lamb. Tom headed it up this year, and the speakers delivered a consistent message across a whole range of subjects, from the Real ID Act to the national animal identification dynamics that are happening, to water policies and transportation policies. And the theme of the conference was linking the dots of sustainable development to show how it is a comprehensive plan beyond imagination for controlling and circumventing the American experience. And, you know, there were three state legislators who were there who are quite aware of the Freedom 21 efforts to expose this dynamic, and who are having major effects in their respective legislatures in Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Oklahoma. And I'm sorry to say that I don't know of any California legislators who are up to snuff on these issues, but it's very refreshing to begin to find out that where it matters, down at the state legislative level, there are people who are catching on and even able to get up in front of a crowd and give their take on specific issues that relate to sustainable development implementation. So after a lot of years of Freedom 21 activities, it was good to see it begin to bubble out into the legislative arena. So it was a good conference, and there's some great talks. I led the conference off, followed by Michael Kaufman and Michael Chapman, and we have sort of a habit of speaking together, wrapping up the whole package of sustainable development. And you know, this was a show that I was very happy to be part of.
The three Michaels, huh?
Three Michaels, yes.
Now, when's the next one, and where is it? Could you tell us, Michael?
Well, it hasn't been decided where. I'm kind of hopeful that it's going to be in San Jose, California, but I won't make that decision. But I will offer that as a site. It may be up in Minneapolis. It may stay somewhere along that Mid-American Trans-Texas Corridor route to continue to rally people to an understanding and in opposition to this internationalist highway that is designed to be the backbone of an emerging North American Union.
Are you familiar with utility corridors?
Well, that's part of the Trans-Texas Corridor. There will be a wide utility lane with, you know, water coming down from Canada, and electric utilities, etc., communication utilities, and the Trans-Texas Corridor is a multimodal system. There'd be lanes dedicated for trucks only. You know, if you're a Mexican truck, you just drive right across, and it's as though there is no border. I mean, the idea behind the North American Union is to eliminate the borders between U.S., Canada, and Mexico, much as the borders in Europe are now open without demarcation for national country lines.
Do you feel that the Europeans felt a loss when that took place with them?
Well, I don't know so much they felt a loss when it took place, but I think increasingly numbers are reacting adversely to the creation of the North American Union. We work with people in Great Britain who are fighting the increasing commitment coming from Britain into the North American Union. There were a number of votes taken, in the last year and a half, that have all proved negative for European Union advocates. And so, the focus now is to, like in Santa Cruz, well, we couldn't get it by vote, we'll just do it by fiat. And that seems to me to be increasingly how the European Union is operating. And I don't think people in France or Germany or Italy are going to take that indefinitely, but to date, there hasn't been the backlash that one would hope, and I suspect that's in large part because the European Union currency has fared well over these last few years in contrast to the national currencies existent before then. Now you can European and come to America and travel like a king, but if you're an American going to Europe, you better find the hostels, because it costs a lot to have a vacation in Paris or London or Berlin. So I think the Europeans may be feeling the false comfort of the buoyancy of their funny money currency, but that won't last. And when it's all done, I can't imagine that the French and the English are going to be any more inclined one to the other as they have been over the last number of centuries. That doesn't mean I hope for war between them, but independence between them would be a good thing.
It's interesting that you mentioned the currency issue, because of course, the North American Union idea is often associated with the North American currency called the Amero, and various people have suggested that maybe our masters intend to crash the dollar and then say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll, you won't lose everything if we just transfer over to the Amero, and then this will be the hook that the catalyst then for the merging of Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
Well, you know, that's possible. It's really difficult to predict what they'll do because, you know, they're holding the cards and they can play them in the order that they want. And, you know, they operate with a motto. It's an old Fabian socialist motto, and that is two steps forward and one step back. So they're always willing to take that step back. You know, right now we're seeing the dollar rally. Is that a step back? You know, it certainly strikes me that the dynamic leading to that rally is manipulated. They can manipulate things up or down. But I think when we start to look at money systems, we have to recognize, we have to understand the nature of money. You know, from the time I was a little boy, I would hear people say, money is the root of all evil, or money is the root of all good. And I kind of grew up thinking that money could be the root of good. But as I got older and I understood the nature of our money today, it's clear to me that money cannot be the nature, the root of good, because our money is funny. It's made up out of thin air by globalist bankers. When it's made up, it is loaned out to somebody, either the government or the industry. So you have the creators of this money out of thin air making a $100 bill at a cost of a nickel and putting it out in a loan dynamic so that for all time that money is outstanding, the globalist banker is earning his interest yield. Well, you do that for a number of decades. You've created all the money. You've earned interest on all the money for all the time that it's been outstanding. And pretty soon you got so much money, you can control the media, you can control the industry, you can control government. Well, that's where we are today. So whether the dollar moves up or goes down, it's a funny money system that will implode on its own if it's not imploded earlier by those who control it. So what happens to the U.S. dollar is not something I can predict other than to say someday it will implode. But as to the specifics of how or when, that depends upon the day-to-day designs of the globalist banking institutions that create and control our money source. So the Constitution says that money shall be silver or gold. It was Woodrow Wilson who took us off that system, put us on the globalist bankers, the Rothschild family, etc., the Rockefellers have gotten into it, system of money created out of nothing, out of thin air, by those at the center of the sustainable development scheme. So we have our hands full. This is where Congressman Ron Paul, you know, brings some necessary sobriety to the subject, because he and the people that he associates with at the Mises Institute in Alabama are all over the issue of honest money. I don't think Paul's ultimate plan for relieving us of this burden is right, but he's at least focusing our attention on the issue that ought to be on every American's mind, and that is, what is the nature of our money? When we discover its true nature, we'll have reason to be concerned about the prospects for the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 globalist takeover of this country. And so if people could just grab that issue, that'll give them the impetus to begin to study two things, the nature of freedom and the nature of Agenda 21. Because we're going to end up with one system or the other. Right now the bets are on Agenda 21. But that can change rapidly if the American people put a little focus on the basics.
So what do you
think?
Yeah,
if they would turn off American Idol and educate themselves.
Well, that's part of it.
So what do you think we should, how should we go about trying to make a positive out of this?
Well, I think it'd be Pollyanna-ish to think we can make a positive out of it anytime soon. What we have to do is understand the nature of what's ailing America and reacquaint ourselves with the nature of what is America. And once we've done those two things, then, then let nature take its course. We'll win. But if we don't do those two things, we're going to lose. And to date, those things haven't been done. So we're on the wrong track. So the call, and I like to make the call particularly to teachers. Teachers coming out of government teaching programs, haven't been given the full information. So they either received it elsewhere or from their family or from other academic pursuits, or they're just without it. Either way, they need to capture what's necessary to save this experience. Or they and their children are going to pay a heavy price for many generations to come, because once collectivism is firmly entrenched in a world system, human life will simply not be anything like what we've experienced in this country or even what we're experiencing today. And that's why it's so important that we get to the basics, understand the nature of America, understand the nature of Agenda 21 sustainable development, make the contrast, and take the action necessary. Now, in reality, people say, well, this is too overwhelming. I can't do anything about it. But sustainable development is a global-to-local program. The battle is in your county. You can do something about that. Understand the global dynamic. Apply it to the local circumstance. Every county is a little different, depending upon whether you're metropolitan or rural, depending upon whether you have water resources or are short of water resources, etc. But the same outline, the same objective, has been launched in every county in America. If you get the global, you fight it locally, and once there's enough of us doing that, we'll win.
Well, since they've infiltrated every aspect of our lives, then if we just took one or two issues at least, we have that option to do. I mean, it wouldn't be all that hard to start paying attention to anything we belong to and how it's affecting them. Correct?
Well, that's correct. I mean, I do think one needs to see the broad picture. We're dealing with some organizations that are on the right track on their issues. What I'd like to point out to them, though, is that work your issues, but understand the bigger picture.
Right.
Because if you don't understand the bigger picture, remember that two steps forward, one step back. If you do great work in fighting real ID, that just gets tabled for a while, just like the train in Santa Cruz got tabled for a while. But as soon as the circumstances turn right, they come right back. We've got to go for the heart of it. We've got to go for sustainable development. So if you want to attack an issue, the public needs to understand it in the broader globalist context of the global to local sustainable development program. Then we can pick out what issues, we're comfortable getting involved in. But just so long as we see it as part of this bigger umbrella, so that it doesn't allow them simply to shift their emphasis from Project A to Project B and C and come back and sweep up on Project A once they've won Projects B and C. We've got to attack the ideology. We need to understand the ideology while we attack the specific applications. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I completely agree. And I just finished an article in which I think I mentioned earlier where I quoted you quite a bit. It's called The Green Global Dictatorship, Regional Governance, UN Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, and the Wildlands Project. And I've got it on my two websites. And I'll just give the website in case anybody's out there with a pencil and wants to look at it. Again, to understand the bigger picture, this is just one of many resources, but one of the sites would be watchwatchalliance.googlepages.com/agenda21. And I would just underscore the point that you made, Michael, which is that it's really hard to know how to operate at the local level and how to counteract the very well-coordinated activities of NGOs and government officials and private corporations unless you understand the big picture. And the big picture is we can educate ourselves with the help of Michael's group and the Internet and articles like I've written. The information's out there, but it takes some work, and what Michael is saying, it all checks out to me, and what he's talking about is a turning point, I think, in history, certainly in American history. We can continue to be a free nation, a nation of people who have private property and freedom of speech, or we could degenerate into a nation controlled by a very, very few robber barons, ruling elite, and the rest of us serfs and slaves. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Or dead. Serfs, slaves, and the dead.
Serfs, slaves, and the dead. I mean, this is not pleasant stuff. It'd be much more fun to watch the Olympics, I'm sure. But, think of your kids.
If we don't have private property...
Your lives, you know?
Exactly.
If we don't have private property rights, we don't have a middle class, and that's what seems to be the major target at what's taking place.
Well, inalienable rights are articulated succinctly by Locke. I mean, they're broader than this, as life, liberty, and property. It's reflected in our Declaration of Independence. It's cited twice in the Bill of Rights. But life, liberty, and property, those are concepts that are connected that every American ought to give thought to, if not some study on. Because when you get that, you'll understand the thrust of the Agenda 21, which is to abolish that notion for all human beings.
Dr. Carlstrom and Michael Shaw, I really appreciate you two coming on the program tonight. And did you have any closing comments, Dr. Carlstrom or Michael, before we close for the evening?
Well, I would just like to say thank you to Michael for all the tremendous work he has been doing and is doing. I seriously considered going to the conference in Texas. I just couldn't pull it together this year. I'm very interested in going to one as soon as possible, because I think what you're doing is more important than what other people are doing. I really appreciate the way you've put it all together in a very succinct manner, and we'll just have to keep trying to spread the word and wake people up.
Well, Michael,
fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's the point of what we do, is to find people like yourselves that are doing what can be done. You know, your radio show and writings and just spreading the word, because when we salvage America, we can say at the end of our lives we've really done a good job. And, we've protected something that was given to us by our ancestors and protected it for our descendants. And if we fail at that mission, this will be the failed generation of all human history. And it's just so important that each of us, those of us talking on the radio and those in the audience listening, that you find some way to contribute to the objective of saving America and salvaging decency for human beings now and in the future.
Well, thanks again, Michael and Dr. Carlstrom, and good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night.